Take an ordinary putty knife and scrape off the old wax ring. Place the new wax ring over the flange, then line up the bolts with the bowl and gently set in place, making sure a proper seal is created with the flange and drain. Next?
Dad?
Yeah, sweetie?
Is that an old plumbing manual?
Oh, yeah, honey.
We really need to get some new books.
Right, do you want me to stop?
Nah, I kinda wanna know how it ends.
Okay, tighten the bolts, line up the flushing valve to the opening in the top of the bowl, and secure the tank with a screwdriver and crescent wrench.
The smallest moments can have the biggest impact on a child's life. Take time to be a dad today. Call 877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Chalk Talk is your weekly home for football news on Penguin Radio.
Black 88! Black 88!
We will take an in-depth look at some of the biggest news and notes from around the football world so you can stay up to date on some of the biggest stories and headlines. It doesn't matter if they are lining up on Sundays at Lambeau.
It's free play. Rodgers has made a living of this. Takes a shot downfield. And James Jones and Rodgers have done it again.
Or if they're on campus inside of the Big House.
Whoa, he has trouble with the snap. And the ball is free. It's picked up by Michigan State's Jalen Watts Jackson. And he scores on the last play of the game. Unbelievable.
Chalk Talk has it all. And now, radio.dominican.edu and Penguin Radio presents Chalk Talk. Let's head into the studio and join your host, Jeff Sefford.
Another Tuesday afternoon here on Penguin Radio, radio.dominican.edu. You're listening to Chalk Talk. I'm your host, Jeff Sefford. We got you here for the next hour or so, talking everything football. We only got one more show after today for the semester. Man, it always seems like a semester always goes by so fast, but got a full show for you this afternoon. A lot of off-the-field news this afternoon in the football world. We're going to start talking about Aldon Smith and Johnny Manziel, both in the news for their both respected teams. Talk about the undefeated teams in the NFL, couple injury news and notes to talk about. Talk a little bit about the NFC North race and where that's headed. And then we're going to take a break. NCAA, we're going to lead about the quarterback situation going on at the University of Nebraska involving the situation with their quarterback. News coming about that today. New playoff rankings coming out this afternoon. They're going to be looking a lot different than what we've seen the last couple weeks. Couple big upsets. The Oregon Ducks knocking off Stanford. LSU goes down. Utah. We'll talk about all that. Oklahoma State, Michigan State, both playing in big games. And then, in our last segment, we're going to talk a little bit about the power of sports in big situations. Obviously, we had the situation in Paris last Friday. Thoughts and prayers go out to anyone that's involved with that whole situation. We're going to talk about how the power of sport was seen in dealing with a situation like that. So, that's going to be our show for this afternoon. Let's get rolling. Started off with our first topic is Raiders defensive end and former 49er Aldon Smith is in the news today. No, he did not do anything more. No, he didn't get another DUI. Don't worry. But it's still not good news for Aldon Smith, however, as the NFL has handed down their suspension for Smith. And I'm surprised it took this long, to be honest with you. But it is going to be for 1 year. And it links back to the last incident that Aldon Smith had on August the 6th, where Smith was arrested for DUI and a hit and run as well, although Aldon Smith has said he is not guilty in the matter. So, that's a little bit up in the air, but with the history that Smith had with that whole situation in the airport and other DUI charges before this, not really a huge surprise at all. And the Raiders should feel that they've gotten this much out of Smith, to be frank. I mean, you know, the Raiders desperately needed a pass rusher, and that's the reason why the Raiders brought him in, is because they needed a guy to rush the passer. And Smith, a 25-year-old player out of the University of Missouri, he's had his off-the-field problems, but man, can he rush the passer. He is one of the best pass rushers in the NFL, no doubt, and for that reason, Smith will definitely, in my opinion, be on an NFL roster when his suspension is up next year. But I really see this as Smith's last chance. If he screws up again, if I were the NFL, I would kick him out. And he should feel lucky that he isn't getting kicked out right now, because I can't think of really any players in the NFL that have made as many mistakes as Alden Smith has. And, I mean, look at somebody like Ray Rice. I mean, Ray Rice, Pro Bowl running back, Super Bowl champion. You know, you can say all these positive things, and he makes that big mistake. We've all seen the video of him with his girlfriend in the elevator, and I know they're still together, but that has ruined his career, and that's probably the reason why he is still a free agent at this point. And who knows if he'll ever find himself onto an NFL roster. And going into other news, maybe a little bit more positive for the image of the NFL after kind of smearing it again with Alden Smith, even though with Alden Smith you're kind of beating a dead horse with that one. But Johnny Manziel will not be disciplined. While the NFL struck down Alden Smith, they will not discipline Johnny Manziel for his involvement in an incident earlier this year in October. I believe it's October 10th. The situation was he was in an altercation with his girlfriend, an alleged altercation with his girlfriend, and was pulled over by police because there were reports that Johnny Manziel was driving recklessly, and Manziel was released by the police. He was allowed to leave with his girlfriend. He was not had a sobriety test done because the cops, although they said they could smell alcohol on his breath, he did not show any signs of being drunk at all. So give credit for Manziel for that, because I mean, we've all by now heard about Manziel and his problems with alcohol and rehab and all this stuff. And I remember when this story came out, we kind of talked about it a little bit, but you know, even though he had struggled with alcohol, him not giving in and not getting too drunk behind the wheel, I think is probably a step in the right direction for Manziel. And you know, and looking at it, this like the physical abuse issue, and the thing I want to look at the most with this is that the point that Manziel and his girlfriend were allowed to leave the scene together. And when you're doing a police investigation, because not everybody listening to this show is a police officer, but when a police officer does an investigation involving domestic violence, if they find any proof from either person that some type of domestic violence occurred, they, you know, nobody is arrested at that point, usually. Sometimes there's arrests made on the spot, but most of the time, these two people are at least told, if there's some type of, you know, discrepancy going on with the information, they're at least told to separate themselves. You know, they separate the two parties so they're not together. So the fact that these two left together tells me that there was not an issue with, you know, that there wasn't an issue with domestic violence with this, which is a good sign for Johnny Manziel, I would have to think. And so hopefully this situation will just go away for Johnny Manziel and he'll be able to focus, because the Browns, coming off their bye week, will have Johnny Manziel as their starting quarterback, because the Browns have announced today that Johnny Manziel will be the starter for the Browns through the rest of the season. And frankly, for me, this makes sense, and I think a lot of people probably saw this coming with Manziel. I mean, with Manziel being a first-round selection back in 2014, the Browns in a position where they're out of the playoff race, but they do have a little bit of talent on both sides of the ball, you know, not an absolutely awful football team. Let's throw Manziel out there and see what he can do, see if he has any future with the Browns as a starting NFL quarterback. And that will put the Browns in a good spot to be able to make a decision in the offseason about what they want to do with the draft. Do they want to, address, because there are a fair amount of needs on this team, wide receiver being a really big one. They are limited. Travis Benjamin has been a surprise and a good surprise for the Browns, but he's not the guy that you should look to be a focal point of an offense. He's a guy I would compare a lot to, I would say, I'd think a guy like Eddie Royal, or maybe even a guy like Randall Cobb, a guy that's dangerous. He's plays a lot in the slot. You know, he's not big, but he has that home run hitter ability. But what the Browns really need is a legitimate outside threat. They need a Hopkins, an A.J. Green, you know, a Odell Beckham, Jordy Nelson, you know, one of those type of guys that can give defenses trouble. And until they get that, it'll be awful tough for the Browns to do anything. Running back might be a good area to look at as well. But if Manziel isn't the guy, you got to believe that the Browns will be drafting a quarterback in the first round. And that's definitely part of the reason why he will be coming back and he will be making starts this year. Because for that reason, the Browns are thinking proactively for a change, which is, for me, if I were a Browns fan, I'd be happy. This is the type of rebuilding situation that you want to see. You want to see if guys on your team right now can be successful in the future. So we'll have to wait and see what old Johnny Football's got up his sleeve in Cleveland. Moving on to other news now. There are only two undefeated teams after the Cincinnati Bengals were defeated last night by the Houston Texans. Get this, but the 4-5, talked about it last week, the 4-5 Texans are now tied for the AFC South lead with the Indianapolis Colts, who were on their bye week last week. So that'll be an interesting thing to follow. But the Pats, the New England Patriots, and the Panthers are the only two unbeatens left in the league. Now, the Patriots did just sneak by the Giants and definitely caught a couple of breaks along the way. That misinterception on the last drive and multiple other plays as well went in the favor of the Patriots, and Steven Gostkowski was just able to sneak a 50-plus yard, I think it was a 54-yard field goal through the right upright, just barely snuck it through, and just something that'll be, you know, sometimes you need one of those wins when you're a really awesome team. You know, you're not going to be able to just waltz through every game every week, and the Giants have, for whatever reason, but always been able to give the Patriots all that they can handle. The two Super Bowl wins in 2008 and 2011, and the Giants fighting for a NFC East title. Really would have liked to have that game, but not to be. The Panthers had a little bit of an easier time with the Houston Texans. The Texans fall to 2-7. Marcus Mariota was kept in check, and really besides one big play to Dexter McCluster, the Titan offense really didn't do much of anything. Not really a huge shocker there. The Panthers just physically a better team up front, and especially when you've got a running game as tough as the Panthers do, they can just wear you out, and The Titans were able to hang around in this game for a while, but in the end, the Panthers' running game just a little bit too much. The one thing that did kind of irk me from this game, though, is that celebration that Cam Newton had at the end of the game, where they scored to go up by 17 points with about 2.5 minutes to go in the game, and Cam Newton decided it was a good time to go into like this little dance. I understand Cam Newton dances a lot in the end zone, but when you're up 17 with 2.5 to go, do you really need to, you know, just stick a fork in them? Especially because what does Cam Newton have against the Titans? I would understand if he was doing it in the Superdome or, you know, or in Atlanta, a team where the Falcons have some, you know, have a little rivalry going with. I can understand that, but, you know, why do that? To me, it just kind of seems a little bit ridiculous. But nonetheless, Carolina has played extremely well this season, and possibly at this point, people could be pointing to a rematch of the 2004 Super Bowl. Jake Delhomme and Steve Smith and the Panthers were able to get to the Super Bowl that season and just lost to the Patriots. It was another game-winning kick by Adam Vinatieri that won that one for Tom Brady and the Patriots back in 04 and at Reliant Stadium, is what it was called then, in Houston. And we'll have to see if those two teams are, they're at this point definitely on the right track to reach that point. And two teams that definitely aren't on that right track, we'll mention one quick injury note. First, Rashad Perriman, the wide receiver for the rookie wide receiver, first round pick out of UCF, was put on IR today by the Baltimore Ravens, and kind of had a lost season for him, and it's been a lost season for the Ravens. They just been injury plagued from the start, and they just can't catch a break. The NFL missed that call on the last play of the game. The Jaguars had a situation where they were not set on for a snap, and there should have been a 10-second runoff in the situation, but officials missed it. Jaguars ended up winning. Just kind of a lost season for Baltimore. And another team going in the wrong direction. What is going on in Green Bay? The Packers have fallen to 6-3 now, and of all teams, the Vikings have taken the lead in the division at 7-2. The Vikings? Huh? You know, it's, wow, the Vikings have just kind of snuck up on everybody. They're definitely a dark horse team in the NFC, and I think people are now taking notice after that beatdown they had on Sunday against the Oakland Raiders at the Coliseum. The Raiders, a team that had played pretty well this season, really took Pittsburgh to the brink the previous week against Ben Roethlisberger. Game ended up in overtime. The Steelers just able to sneak one by at Heinz. But Minnesota, in the second half, just went into Oakland and punched them in the mouth. There is no ifs, ands, or buts about it. Adrian Peterson, over 200 yards rushing for the game, 2 touchdowns. Teddy Two Gloves was pretty efficient, and this Vikings team with that tough defense as well is looking pretty tough. They have a bunch of young talent. Anthony Barr, the linebacker, has been kind of turned into one of the best young linebackers in the NFL, and sitting at 7-2, if the playoffs were to start today, they would be right there with the Arizona Cardinals I have to be honest, I don't know what the tiebreaker would be for the 2-3 seed at this point, but they would be right there for a first round bye and would be guaranteed at least one home playoff game. And that's the thing I would look at. And what NFL team is going to want to go to Minneapolis, Minnesota, to go play a game outdoors on turf in the middle of January? It would probably look like a scene out of the movie Fargo. You wouldn't even be able to see the field. It would just be this white, frozen over thing that looks more like a hockey rink. And I mean, I can remember a number of years ago, the Vikings played a game outdoors when Brett Favre was still playing, and Brett Favre had the injury that basically ended his career that night, where he still talks about it, how the field felt like concrete. And I mean, that's just not going to be an easy place for any team to go on the road. And I guess, you know, frankly, it won't be a good situation for the Vikings either. But still a long way to go. The Packers and the Vikings will be facing off next week in Minnesota. Big game for Green Bay. They've just, you know, lost three straight games after, you know, I really put them as the only really legitimate, you know, elite team in the NFC for the first 6 weeks. I mean, we were still learning about Carolina. We didn't know if they were really legit now. I think you can put them in the legit category now. But it's just still, kind of confusing about what's going on. Even Aaron Rodgers hasn't been playing all that great for Green Bay. Threw over 60 passes last week and, you know, missed multiple open receivers. And the offense just looks a little out of sync right now. And you got to wonder if Mike McCarthy will decide to take the play calling roles back. They turned the play calling roles over to their offensive coordinator earlier at the start of this season. You got to wonder if maybe Mike McCarthy will take those roles back on. Maybe he was the right guy to call the plays in Green Bay. All right, so we're finished with our first segment. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about the situation in Nebraska involving their starting quarterback, and we'll also talk about the playoff rankings and everything else going on campus. You're listening to Chalk Talk. This is Jeff Safford. We'll be right back after these quick messages. Don't go anywhere.
That no one likes me. In English, I learned that I'm disgusting. And in physics, I learned that I'm a loser.
Today in school, in math, I learned that I'm ugly and useless. Trash. And in gym, in biology, I learned that I'm pathetic and a joke. In history, I learned that I'm trash.
Today in school, I learned that I have no friends. In biology, in English, I learned that I make people sick. And at lunch, I learned that I sit on my own because I smell. In chemistry, I learned that no one likes
me. In biology, I learned that I'm fat and stupid. And in math, I learned that I'm trash.
The only thing I didn't learn in school today...
The only thing I didn't learn today...
The only thing I didn't learn...
is why no one ever helps.
Kids witness bullying every day. They want to help, but they don't know how. Teach them how to stop bullying and be more than a bystander at stopbullying.gov. A message from the Ad Council.
My name is Dale Pazinski. I'm 19 years old, and this is how I live United. I've always been kind of a computer geek, and I found a way to use those skills to help the homeless in my community. For people facing hard times, computer skills and a basic resume are so important. It may seem like a small thing, but it makes a huge difference in people's lives. So with United Way, I created a program where I work with the homeless. Together, we go through their whole job history, write a resume, and then save it on their very own USB drive. We provide workbooks and training certificates. I even budgeted for cupcakes so we can celebrate as a class when one of our people gets a job. That's huge. When somebody says, "Hey man, that job that you helped me apply for, I got it." That's what living United feels like to me. My name is Dale Pazinski. I help people achieve financial independence. So I don't just wear the shirt, I live it.
Give, advocate, volunteer, live United. Go to liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the show. You're listening to Chalk Talk here on Penguin Radio, radio.dominican.edu. I'm your host, Jeff Safford. We just wrapped up our NFL talk segment for the week. One thing we'd like to also mention about football, Tony Romo will be making his return for the Dallas Cowboys this week. So we'll have to see if he can turn things around in Big D. All right, but going on to NCAA football talk now. The big news, breaking news coming out just very recently involves, kind of mentioned it a couple times, involves University of Nebraska Cornhusker starting quarterback Tommy Armstrong, who is involved in an investigation. No way is he being charged of anything at this point, but Armstrong is involved in a rape case of a 20-year-old woman claiming to have been abused at the home of Tommy Armstrong. Armstrong also lives with wide receiver and roommate Jordan Westerkamp, who is also a top player on the team. Like I mentioned, no arrests were made, and the police interviewed the players that were involved in this situation. And it seems like one of those situations where Armstrong seems to be a little bit confused about what's going on in this situation, that he claims to have no involvement in the situation, and that he felt that any situations that took place, any sexual situations that took place on that particular night, were consensual. And I guess the main thing I want to look at with this whole issue is that I hope that this does not become a witch hunt against Armstrong and Westerkamp, because we've seen this before, and we've seen a lot of sexual abuse cases surrounding athletes. I mean, we've seen it in the NFL, we've seen it in the NBA, we've seen it everywhere in professional sports, even on the women's side, not with the sexual abuse, but we meant kind of talking about Hope Solo with her involvement with an assault case as well. So it's kind of everywhere in the athletic world right now, and it's a very hot button issue. But I really hope that people don't just start jumping all over Armstrong and turning this into a social media you-know-what storm. Because that would just, to me, be very unfortunate and something that we shouldn't do. We have our judicial system for a reason. They will go back and look and see what happened. They will look at the evidence and find out what should happen. And I've mentioned the reason I don't want to see this really blow up and turn into a big PR nightmare is because this could really work against Armstrong and Westerkamp and be unfair. This reminds me a lot of a situation that happened at the University of Oregon in 2014 involving a couple basketball players, Dominique Artist and Damian Dotson, the two main players that were involved in that situation. And those two players were involved in a similar situation where a sexual assault case was brought up. No charges were filed, and they were acquitted of any wrongdoing by the judicial system. But because this caused such a big PR nightmare for the school, they had to kick the players off the basketball team, and they had to leave the school, which, you know, these two young guys, they're great basketball players, and, you know, who knows? Maybe their, you know, careers were at stake. Maybe they had thoughts of playing professional basketball somewhere, and being at a Pac-12 institution and playing for Dana Altman, a D1 coach, it was just a tough situation for the athletes to have to leave the program because a girl basically cried wolf against them and, you know, tried to use her 5 seconds in fame for accusing these poor basketball players for doing something wrong. So I guess my point is that I really, like I said, I really hope that people will, you know, hold their pitchforks back and don't cause any riots just yet. Let's just see what the facts are first. And by I'm not condoning sexual assault whatsoever. I mean, I understand how big of an issue it is. But before you start pointing fingers and accusing people of doing something, you have to actually learn about the facts and see what we have presented. And when you're looking at this situation, there just isn't anything there yet. We have to let the judicial system run its course. We have to let, and you know, we can't judge anything yet because we really, frankly, don't know anything at this point. And man, what else could Mike Riley deal with this year? I mean, obviously they've had a little bit more success after that big win against Michigan State a couple weeks ago. And should be an interesting story to follow as these weeks progress. All right, we're going to move on to our next story now. A lot of interesting stuff going on in the college football world. The playoff selections will be announced this afternoon, and it's going to be interesting selection to see because so many teams have been mixed around or should be mixed around after a bunch of teams went down this previous week, the Stanford Cardinal being one of them, Baylor Bears, Baylor at number 6, Stanford at number 7, LSU at number 9 went down to Arkansas, and number 10, Utah, I guess you could say bore down at the University of Arizona. Get it? Arizona, bear down, bore down, I guess. Kind of a lame pun there. I'll take credit for that, but they go down, and now who knows? That whole back end of the top 10 is going to be completely different once we get word of where these teams are going to be in the rankings. We'll be sure to let you know what's going on with the rankings this week, but I don't expect to see too many changes in the top four this week, as all four of the top four teams were able to win this week. Clemson in non-really, you know, impressive fashion. They really struggled with Syracuse. Give Syracuse some credit. They had the number one team in the country come into their building, and they were a heavy underdog, and they gave them everything that they could handle. That was a one possession game for a majority of the fourth quarter, and Clemson should feel lucky that they got the heck out of there with a win, that's for sure. Alabama, different story. They kind of just walked all over Mississippi State, aided really by some big plays. Alabama really only had three or four really big plays in that one. They had a punt return for a touchdown. Coker threw 60-plus yard touchdown pass. Derrick Henry had a big run for 70-plus yards for a touchdown. And when you're a team like Mississippi State, who needed a lot of stuff to go right and not to make big mistakes like that, and you make four of them against a team that's as good as Alabama, you're pretty much in for some trouble. And Alabama seems to be on its way to the SEC championship game now against the Florida Gators, who have already booked their ticket to the SEC championship game. Really, the only obstacle I see left on the Alabama schedule is the Iron Bowl, and I think that's going to be a much closer game than a lot of people think, just for the reason that Gus Malzahn really doesn't have any other game to really think about critically until the Iron Bowl. Not that the game they're playing isn't important for them, because they need any win that they can get to hopefully make it to a bowl game, but the Iron Bowl is certainly the biggest game left on the schedule, and you can't tell me that Malzahn and those guys are licking their chops wanting to knock off Alabama in their home stadium. And really, if Auburn were to be able to win that football game, then Auburn would Auburn fans and their and the faithful members of their alma mater would just be would just forget about the rest of the season. I mean, that's how big that rivalry is. And another team making a really big move in the standings was number 8 Oklahoma State, who went into went into Iowa State, and I kind of warned them. I mean, I was on the show last week. I was talking about this, how they fell into this trap at Iowa State in 2011. Brandon Whedon, the number 2 team in the country, went into Ames and were beaten by Iowa State. And it looks like for a while that this Oklahoma State team would fall the same way that that previous Oklahoma State teams had fallen before. But man, did they turn it around. And man, what a resilient bunch this Oklahoma State Cowboy team is. They've been down in by double digits in 5 games, and they have come back in every single one of them. That's attributing really to both sides of the ball. When you're down by multiple possessions like that, your offense needs to click, and it needs to score points at an efficient level. But it also means that you have to play solid defense as well. When you're behind, if you're trading touchdowns, that's not going to do you any good. You got to be sticking with them. You know, you got to be making the stops and then letting your offense go on the field and make plays for itself. So the Cowboys, they have a big one coming this week against the Baylor Bears, who were ranked number 6, will be falling in the rankings, I'm sure, after that loss to Oklahoma. Oklahoma looked very impressive. They were ranked number 12 in last week's rankings. So they will be moving up, and Bob Stoops made a very kind of big statement, I would say, earlier this afternoon, saying that if Oklahoma were to win out, they deserve a spot in the playoff, even with the one loss. And I think he would definitely have a case there, because they would have these last couple weeks, they would have wins against Baylor, at Baylor, a win in the Bedlam game next weekend at Oklahoma State, and a win this week. They're playing Trevon Boykin and the TCU Horned Frogs. So those are 3 extremely good wins, and all 3 of those teams have been in the playoff chase at some point this season. So I would think that Oklahoma would definitely have a case there. And another case that can be made about an individual on that Oklahoma team is Mayfield, their quarterback. Blake Mayfield, Baker Mayfield could have a case for the Heisman Trophy. And for the performances that this guy's had and the clutch situations where he has come up big, I think is a big reason why he might be a consideration for the Heisman. And I would definitely put him up above Trevon Boykin on my Heisman list at this point. And Leonard Fournette, after being, I would call him the first half Heisman, he has definitely fallen off the Heisman boards, as he has had two under par games. He had that that ominous 13-carry, 13-yard performance 2 weeks ago against Alabama, and then last week was also held to under 100 yards. The first time he has done that in 2 games this season, 2 consecutive games that he's been held to under 100 yards. So this Heisman race definitely put Henry at the top of the list, but I almost see him as kind of he's almost like the safe pick at this point. You know, he's another Alabama running back in the race. We've seen it with Trent Richardson and Mark Ingram. You can even throw TJ Yeldon's name in there as some point being brought up in the Heisman race. But, you know, if Mayfield, to me, if he makes a lot of plays and keeps playing at a high level and leads Oklahoma to running the table for the rest of the season and the Big 12 title, I would say he has a huge case to win this award, and maybe will even be more deserving than a guy like Derrick Henry, who is, by the way, playing behind one of the best offensive lines in college football. Moving on to the Big Ten now, as they have a couple of really big games on the schedule. Wisconsin Badgers, oh yeah, they're taking on Northwestern this week of a matchup of top 25 teams, but really the big one coming up this week, the Ohio State Buckeyes, undefeated, come in with the nation's longest active winning streak, come in at 10-0, facing off against Sparty, Michigan State. And this one should be a good one. Michigan State was ranked number 13 in the rankings last week, and really did get screwed with that ending at Nebraska. I understand they had that. I mean, it was how they beat Michigan was unorthodox and very unlikely, but there at least there wasn't an illegal play that happened in that game where, frankly, that last touchdown that Nebraska had against Michigan State last week just should not have counted. That was just a mistake by the officials, and it was a shame. But Michigan State this week can shake that off. You know, I don't think Taylor Swift will be in attendance, but they'll be try to shake it off, and they will head into the horseshoe for a big matchup. The JT Barrett-led Ohio State Buckeyes with Zeke Elliott, and that's a guy to me that hasn't been talked about enough for the Heisman. I know he's on a lot of Heisman watch boards, but think about it: where would Ohio State be without Elliott? They've had so many problems with the quarterback position, with Barrett and Jones having that little power struggle for the number one spot. But Elliott has been the guy that when Ohio State's offense has been down, you know, not working, that he'll be the guy that busts that 60, 70 plus yard run to bail Ohio State out. But you look at this game for Ohio State against Michigan State. This is easily the best team that Ohio State will face this year. I mean, come on. They started off playing Virginia Tech in Blacksburg. Virginia Tech, a 500 team, hasn't really played well. They were challenged by Indiana on the road. Northern Illinois gave them a really big fight. Sparty is no Northern Illinois. This is a team with a first-round quarterback in their backfield for sure. They got a lot of weapons to use. Veteran team. Their defense definitely not up to snuff from what it's been in previous years. But I look at this Michigan State team, and I think that they should be the favorites to win this football game, and here's why. Their quarterback situation, I think, at this point, just gives them more balance. They're going into the horseshoe with a team, with a leader, with a team that's ready to play. And I think that's the biggest thing when you look at this team. And make no mistake about it, Mark D'Antonio is definitely going to be ready to get his team ready for this game. And Connor Cook, he has been in just about any situation you can think of. He's been very efficient again this season, over almost 2,500 yards, 21 touchdowns, only 4 picks for the senior quarterback, and he just brings that calm to the huddle that I don't think Ohio State has right now on the offensive side of the ball. Just plain and simple. JT Barrett and Cardell Jones are both fantastic players and could start on any football team in college football, no doubt about it. But the mistake, I believe, that Urban Meyer has made with this team is that neither one of those guys has been established as a leader. And I understand you can say Elliott is a good leader, but when it all comes down to it, your quarterback is your field general, and you can't win without a quarterback playing at a high level when you get to games like this. And if Ohio State continues to struggle with the quarterback position like they have all season long, then Sparty and Connor Cook is going to go in there and they're going to beat those guys. They're not going to be afraid of the horseshoe and their 100,000 people. They've been to Autzen. They've played in Big Ten championships. They've played in the Rose Bowl. There's nothing that these guys haven't seen before. And that's why I think Michigan State will roll into Columbus and will beat the Buckeyes for their first defeat of the season. Looking at other news from other conferences, the Pac-12, should say, man, the WAC-12 would maybe be a better word for it, as both playoff contenders that were left in the conference, number 7 Stanford and number 10 Utah, are both seemingly knocked out, both picking up their second loss. Utah, a little bit more of a surprise, playing an Arizona team on the road that hadn't looked good all year. It had been a big disappointment. Got blown out early in the year by UCLA. Got blown out a couple weeks ago at the University of Washington, a team that's been about equally mediocre. And just performance just kind of comes out of nowhere for the Wildcats. You know, you see this a lot of times. You're playing a team that's, you know, got a lot of guys. Solomon, they still have Scooby Wright, a lot of weapons from that team last year. When you're playing a team like that at home, even though they haven't had a lot of success, they make some plays early, gain some motivation. It becomes a trap game situation, and that's exactly what happened to Utah. Look at the Utes, kind of a classic example, at least to me, of a team peaking at the wrong time. They went into Autzen Stadium early in the year, put 60-plus on the Ducks. You know, everybody was patting them on the back, telling them how good they were, how their senior quarterback Wilson was leading the team so well, how the defensive front 7 was one of the best in football, and yada, yada, yada. And I just think that they just kind of ran out of gas, and that's kind of what it looked like happened in Salt Lake. However, they still do have a very good chance to win the Pac-12. They have a huge matchup coming this week against UCLA, and another big game in the Pac-12 this week involving the team that beat Stanford, the Oregon Ducks, will be hosting USC in a ranked. Both teams are going to be ranked this week, at least in the AP polls they are. Oregon coming at number 22 in the AP polls, USC at 23 in the AP polls, and man, who saw that one coming about a month ago? With Oregon sitting at 3-3, looked dead in the water, and USC in a similar position, having fired Steve Sarkisian and everything that went on. Those two programs both have turned it around, and that should be a good one. Well, to put on your cue, you can be switching back and forth from that game and the Michigan State-Ohio State game. Sure, it'll be fun one to watch, and the Ducks are also alive in the Pac-12 North. If Stanford loses one more game, they would be in position, but the team that's out in front, or that would get in before Oregon, would be the surprising Washington State Cougars, and we have to bring them up. Just, they're sitting at 7-3. They haven't had a season this good in since 2003, and I just feel so good for that alumni base and for anybody involved with the Cougar program up there in Wazoo. This is a fan base that's been waiting for so long to have a good team. It's such a strong alumni base. I mean, you see it on College Game Day every week. The one flag, the one school that's always been represented at every college stadium around the nation has been Washington State. A Washington State flag always flies at College Game Day. It's a really cool tradition. It kind of shows how much the Cougar Nation really supports their Cougs, and it's just been such a dismal time for the program, and Mike Leach has just kind of gone in there and brought them back from the dead with all those crazy Leachisms. He had one last week when he was talking about how disco music ruined the music industry and how it's still recovering and how he loves Neil Young and all this stuff. Man, he's talking about Neil Young. I just thought, man, my dad would love this guy. Like, I could just see him posting up with, you know, with an IPA and just talking about life for about 2 hours. I mean, I guess that probably wouldn't sound too bad for me either. But definitely congrats to the Cougs. They had another big win this week on the road in the Rose Bowl against UCLA, a big win for their program. Luke Falk has been fantastic this year. Gabe Marks, the wide receiver, has been one of the best, if not the best, wide receivers in the Pac-12. Look for him to be a really interesting NFL prospect with a lot of speed and ability. Reminds me a little bit maybe of Steve Smith. Not the biggest guy, but he makes all the big plays when it matters the most. All right, so we're up against it. We're just got a few minutes left of the show here, just about 10 minutes to 5. You're listening to Chalk Talk here on Penguin Radio, radio.dominican.edu. This is Jeff Safford, and we're going to take our last break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about the power of sports in society and how football and sports in general can be used in the healing process of a tragedy. So stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hey, Dr. Phil here. You know, I help people solve difficult problems every day, but one problem has me stumped: childhood hunger. Nearly 16 million children in America struggle with it. Luckily, the Feeding America network of local food banks collects surplus food, giving hope to hungry children and their families. But they need your help. Join me in supporting Feeding America and your local food bank at feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Hey kids, let mom help with your science project.
This new mom wants her kids' science project to thrive. Too bad she hasn't cracked a science book since 1985.
A metathesis reaction?
Compounds, mixtures, and elements. Even this baking soda volcano is too big of an experiment. Whoa. Now she's completely forgotten the periodic table. Now she's burning a hole through the kitchen table.
Burning with science.
But her kids' love for their mom is truly transparent. Proof you don't have to be perfect to be the perfect parent.
Don't tell Dad.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Thousands of siblings in foster care will take you just as you are. For more information on how you can adopt, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUS Kids, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Chalk Talk. You're listening to Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu. Just about happy hour time, about 5 minutes to five. And it's got to be 5 o'clock somewhere, right? Coming up after me from 5 to 6. PM is Uncovered with DJ Soundwave. Love saying that. Has her talk about her show with YouTube cover artists. She does a great job every week, so make sure you tune into that. And also make sure you tune in at 7 p.m. tonight for Dominican women's basketball. I'm coming to you live from the Conlon Center. Yours truly will be on the call. Jeff Safford, Joseph Gutierrez, and Kara New will all be with you from the Conlin Center as Dominican University, their Women Penguins, have their next matchup at the Conlin Center. They split the action they had this split past weekend at a tournament at Cal State East Bay, went 1-1, and come in to the matchup with that record at 1-1. They will look to get above 500 in this young season. So make sure you tune in to both of those things going on Penguin Radio this evening. Uncovered at 5 and Dominican women's basketball tip-off starting at 7 p.m. from the Conlin Center. So moving into our last topic of the evening, just a few minutes before we got to say goodbye. I know, wish I could stay with you guys and talk for a couple hours, but I'm sure Stuart Horn, our general manager, would probably get very angry with me. So the last thing I think just wanted to talk about, just make a quick note about, was obviously kind of mentioned it at the beginning of the show. I'm sure everybody is, you know, hurting with the French people and the entire city of Paris after that horrible attack by ISIS extremists. I guess I shouldn't say Islamic, because not all people who practice Islam are radical like these people were, but over 100 people died, and just a horrible experience for everybody. But the one thing I did think was very cool from this past weekend was just the support that the football world showed for the people in Paris. It started on Saturday, right from the get-go at 9 a.m., the picture from West Point and the University of Army football team coming out with the American flag next to the French flag as well. And I thought that was a really awesome gesture. You know, what kind of a sign is that? You know, the military coming out with a French flag, you know, says that we're with you, we support you, and that's the way it should. You know, France is our oldest ally, as many people know, and the French are a big reason why we get to enjoy all of the great freedoms we have today, and should definitely show their support. And at every NFL game this past week, there was a moment of silence for French people, and I think, and for everything that happened over there. And I think this really shows the power that sports can have to bring people together, to heal, and just to give a feeling of we're not afraid, that we're not going to let these guys get what they want. You know, we're not going to give them their, you know, their moments of, oh, you know, just, you know, I'm not even sure what they're trying to create when they do something terrible like this. But they don't deserve any type of credit for anything that they do in this manner. And I think it's really a great show of support. And, you know, I just think it's really cool how sports can bring it together. We've seen it here in the United States with 9/11, and also with after the Boston bombings, how the city of Boston just rallied together, and really they rallied together and won a World Series with the Red Sox in 2013. It was a great moment for the city. And when you get stuff like that happening, it becomes something much bigger than just sports. And that's where I think athletics is and should be something that's relevantly talked about, you know, in the major news, is because the power of sports is something that can be underestimated, I think, and sometimes I think can be underutilized. And I think this example is a perfect reason why, with how everyone in this community was just behind the cause and just was there to support. And that is what is most important. Well, we are out of time here on Chalk Talk. I appreciate everybody who has tuned in and listened to us all semester long. Again, next week will be our last show of the semester. We're wrapping up for Christmas break. I know it seems wild to start thinking about Christmas. I mean, let's just have the damn turkey first, right? But anyway, we'll see you next week. Thanks again for listening in. I'm Jeff Safford, and make sure you tune in to Penguins Basketball here at 7 p.m. and stay tuned for DJ Uncovered as well. She's coming up next. Have a great night, everybody.